Ecclesiastes. And if you don't know where that is, just go to the book of Proverbs and then make a right turn and you'll run right into it. Now let me just say that Ecclesiastes has so much for us. It is written by a man with two names. The familiar name is the name of Solomon. And that name means peace, one who has peace. But in his 40 years, and by the way, he reigned for 40 years, and in those 40 years, it was basically a time of peace when it came to the other nations. However, he lacked that peace within. You know why? Because he had the brains, and he certainly had the bucks, but he didn't have the behavior. And we know that this man, Solomon, he also had another name. Anybody know what his other name was? What? Jedidiah, yeah. And that name means beloved or beloved of God. And it was a name that characterized a life lived in the right place. Now, there's going to be a phrase, and I just want you to look there with it. I want to just point out some thoughts here. The words of the preacher, the word Ecclesiastes means preacher. Now, when I think of Solomon, obviously, you're not thinking of a preacher, are you? Here's a guy that needed to be preached to. But God had him under inspiration to write this book, and we have it in the canon of Scripture. He said, the son of David, king in Jerusalem. And then he uses a word here, vanity. Would you underline that word of vanity? It's going to be found 34 times in the book of Ecclesiastes. And it means empty, vain, empty. It's the idea of the word. Somebody said the book of Ecclesiastes is God's email from heaven to us. Because you're going to find that life under the sun, and you're going to find a phrase there, under the sun, that is mentioned several times in it. But matter of fact, let's look down here. Vanity of vanities, says the preacher. Vanity of vanities, always vanity. Then he says, what profit hath a man of all his labor which he taketh where? Under the sun. So the book of Ecclesiastes sees life as it is under the sun. You know, folks, life under the sun is a problem. But a life under the sun, spelled S-O-N, is a blessing. And what are you living tonight? Life under the sun, S-U-N, or life under the sun, S-O-N? I hope it is S-O-N. You will realize that Solomon wrote three books. Very interesting. He wrote the Song of Solomon. I believe that was in his early years. It's a love song, and if there's ever a man who knew something about love, or passion, or lust, whatever you want to call it, it's Solomon. Matter of fact, you find in 1 Kings chapter 11, turn there for just a moment. I mean, you know, first, go over there real quick to 1 Kings in chapter 11 with me. And very interesting statement made there in chapter 11 in 1 Kings. Verse 3, and he had 700 wives. And princes, and 300 concubines. Now that's a lot of nylons in the bathroom any way you cut it. That is going to be a problem. You know, this guy had a problem. He was a man who had wealth, and he was a man who had wisdom. When I think of that, remember what his prayer was? He said, Lord, give me what? Wisdom. Now I don't know a man. Somewhere down the line, he must have lost that wisdom to have all those women. But he wrote this book. So he wrote the Song of Solomon. Those were the early years. Then I believe he wrote the book of Proverbs in the middle years, when he was middle age. Then I believe he wrote the book of Ecclesiastes in his later years. And I believe that it's in his later years as he looks back and he realizes that horizontal living will get you nowhere. Are you living horizontal this way, or are you living this way? And here was a man who had come to the conclusion that Horizontal happiness won't last. It will leave you deflated, depressed, and disillusioned. And so, as you read this book or go through this book, and I would suggest you spend some time reading it, he comes to three basic conclusions. Very interesting conclusions. Number one, the pursuit of something better tomorrow robs us of the joy of today. Let me say that to you again. The pursuits of something better tomorrow robs us of our joy today. Very interesting. And the point is, don't waste your life wishing for more in life. I hear people, if I only had this. Right now we're in the, I think about the lottery, and you know, you hear that, boy, if I just could win the lottery. Well, I've heard of some people who have won the lottery, and life was in shambles because they had the lottery. You say, that wouldn't happen to me. How do you know? But I come over there at verse 8 of chapter 1. So the pursuit of something better tomorrow robs us of our joy today. And so many of, even of God's people, are looking for something better tomorrow, and they're not enjoying what God does today. Look there in verse 8. All things are full of labor. I'm in Ecclesiastes 1, verse 8. All things are full of labor. Man cannot utter it. Notice the phrase here. Underline the phrase, would you? At least in your thinking, if not otherwise. What? The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. There's always something more that you'd rather have than what you have now. Something that you see, boy, if I could just have the, boy, when I hear about this. What that does, that robs you of the joy of today because you're so busy looking to tomorrow. Second point, not only do we see the pursuit of something better tomorrow robs us of our joy today, but secondly, the pain of wrong choices is greater than the pleasure we can get out of them. The pain of wrong choices is better than the pleasure we get out of them. And I think that's what chapter 1 and all the way down verses 12 to down there to verse 17. You just read that section. Notice, let's read here verse 12. Starts with here. I, the preacher, was king over Israel and Jerusalem. I gave my heart to seek and to search out by wisdom concerning all things that are done under heaven. Notice, under heaven. You know, we'd be better focusing on heaven and not under heaven. This sore travail had God given to the sons of man to exercise with it. I've seen all the works that are done under the sun. I mean, he saw everything. Behold, all is what? Vanity. It is empty. And vexation is the word for which we get the word troubled, and troubled of spirit. That which is crooked cannot be made straight, and that which is wanting cannot be numbered. In other words, only God can straighten a thing that is crooked. Only God can do that. So here he sees life under the sun. And so the second point, not only is the pursuit of something better tomorrow, the pursuits of something better tomorrow robs us of our joy today, but secondly, the pain of wrong choices is greater than the pleasure we get out of them. In other words, that word vexation is the pain he had because he would spend all the time. He's looking back. He's at the end of his life, and he's looking back, and he's saying, I spent so much time trying to find pleasure and satisfaction and this and that, and the pain of it was greater than the pleasure I got out of searching these things. Thirdly, matter of fact, even before I have to just talk a moment here. Thirdly, no matter how long you live, you ready for this? Third point. Let me get the first two again. First two, the pursuit of something better tomorrow will rob us of our joy today. The pain of wrong choices is greater than the pleasure we get out of them. And thirdly, no matter how long you live, are you ready for this? You will be dead longer. I'll think that one through for a moment. No matter how long you live, you'll be dead longer. So you better plan for life after death. And the older I get, the more that becomes a reality to me. I have written down here a letter from one young lady who had committed suicide. That hit to me, harmed to me, because I remember just before my brother took his own life, how depressed and he thought life was worthless and there's no purpose in it. But she wrote a letter, and here's what the letter said. To anyone in the world who cares, who am I? Why am I living? Life has been stupid and purposeless. Nothing makes sense anymore. The question I had when I came to college, the questions I had when I came to college are still unanswered. And now I am convinced that there is no life to live. There can only be pain and guilt and despair in this world. Notice what she says, my fear of death and the unknown is far less terrifying than the prospects of unbearable frustration, futility, and hopelessness of continued existence. This is a teenager who wrote this letter and then ended her life. Isn't that tragedy? Think with me for a moment as we look here. Life under the sun. Look here. I want you to go back to verse 3. There's a word here I want you to take note of, and that's the word profit. Look at verse 3. What profit hath a man of all his labor which he had taken under the sun? Now, under the sun is life. The idea of under the sun is life without God. It's just living. It's just existence. The word profit is an interesting word. Is it a counting word? It is that which is left at the end of a transaction. That's what the word means. You know that life is like a transaction. And what are you going to have left at the end of the transaction called your life? What is going to be there? Isn't that a good question? When I look back at my life, I was with someone yesterday, or Monday, my wife and I went over to Brevard to someone, a couple that we know very well. We met them in Florida. It is pretty obvious that they, down through the years, have had a great sum of money. But you know what they've done with that money? They've invested it in people's lives. And they have a camp there. Remember, how many have ever heard of Canaan Land? Everybody here, Canaan Land? Yeah. It's a great place. He bought that 120 acres, and he has a place down in Florida. He's also working for people in full-time Christian work that can go there and just spend a week and just rest and relax, and just, it's a great place. And I went there for a day because he had some questions he wanted to help improve his, not about camp, about philosophy. So I was there for my wife and I for a day, and I thought, here's a fella. And George and I were talking, and I said, you know, George, he said, I'm 66 now. And I said, well, he said he will be 66. And I said, boy, I'm glad I'm not that old. But anyway, we were talking. And I said, George, I put my arm around him. I said, you're going to be able to look back on life. You're going to say, I invested what God gave me in the right place. Isn't that good? You make the right investment because life is a transaction. And you're going to invest that life into some things that are really going to count, or you're going to invest your life in things that don't make any difference. You've heard the saying, soon this life will be past, and only for what's done for Christ will what? Last. And that's really what the writer here is trying to get across to us. And so he uses that word prophet. And we realize, you know, somebody said, when it comes to this life under the sun, a man never earns enough, never has enough clothes, cars are never nice enough, houses are never big enough, food is never tastes good enough, and life is never full enough, and man is never satisfied enough. It's simply time to say, enough is enough. And live above the sun. That's what the book is all about. Now, you know, every day I was kidding somebody not too long ago. I said I get up in the morning, and I don't really do this, but I said somebody said to me, said I look at the obituary column. If my name is not there, then I go ahead and get dressed and fine. I think I'm going to continue on the day. But you ever notice you come in, you have the birth column and on paper. I don't know if you have it here. We have it in our, the births of babies. And it won't be long. One day you're going to move from the birth column, what? To the death column. Because life, no matter how long you live, you're going to be dead longer in this life. Now, as he begins to deal with this book, as we looked at that word vanity, an email from God, empty life, life under the sun, and how he looked at life under the sun and he saw everything, vanity, 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 and vexation of spirit. Now he's going to deal with some principles here. I'm only going to deal with one of them tonight. First of all, he's going to deal with the burden of life. And then secondly, we're going to deal here with the brevity of life, just how short life is. You know, the older I get, the more I realize the brevity of life. You know, a lot of my friends at our age, Doc and Brother Smith, are dying at our age. We're seeing it fastly going off the scenes. We have to think about it. So he deals here, thirdly, with the basis of life. What is life all about? The basis of life. And then, you know, one of the problems that this man had, he was bored with life. You ever notice some people get bored with life? I hope you're not bored with life. I hope life has a lot more meaning to you, but I find a lot of people bored. Bored to death. Literally, they can't wait till life is over. We, in a few more weeks, come July 31st, my wife and I will be inundated with seven folks in our home. And I guarantee you, we will not have time to be bored. We don't have time now to be bored, but I think then, you know. And we'll probably need a day off occasionally just to get away from it all so we can relax. How many know what I'm talking about? You know what I'm talking about? You've been there doing that. You know, aren't you glad when the grandchildren come, particularly, and you're glad to see the headlights? There's a point you're glad to see the taillights. You know what I'm talking about? I hope so. Now here we deal here, first of all, with the burden of life. Look there in verse 4 and 5. I'm not going to have time to deal with that whole book, so I'm just going to lift things out I hope will be a help to you. Look at verse 4 and verse 5. One generation passes away, another generation cometh, but the earth abideth forever. Now, this is life under the sun. This is how a person who doesn't look to God for it. How he sees the world's going to just abide forever. We know it's not, don't we? God's going to come back, going to blow this one up, give us a new one. The sun also rises, the sun goeth down and hasteth to his place where he arises. In other words, every day starts with the sun rising and then the sun setting at night. In other words, he deals here in life. If you notice verse 4 and 5, doesn't seem like there's much change there, is it? You know, the sun just automatically sets at a certain, you know, it just sets and it rises and sets. And we know that one generation passes away, another one comes. If you don't believe that, visit a cemetery. I won't forget the first church that I pastored. It was literally on a dead-end street. At the other end was the cemetery. And I would go up there. And I spent a lot of time up there just talking to the Lord. I wasn't talking to the dead. I was talking to the living. Now and then I look at those tombstones, and I thought, one generation here, another generation there, and won't be long. One day they'll look and see my name on one of those tombstones if the Lord tarries. You know, I'm not worried about that. I hope you're not. But we're going to be that generation that's going to pass, and another's going to take our place. You know, you're just not going to live forever on this earth. And so you really need to make it count. Now, someone said, you know, and I find as we get into this here, so verse 4 and 5, one generation passes away, another one comes, sun rises, sun sets every day, day in, day out, same thing. And in between the sun rising and the sun setting, we get all those burdens of the day. You know, I remember so many, you know, now and then I sit down with somebody who just can't wait to retire. You know what? I find people are retiring at 40 and 50 years of age. Blows my mind. You know, I decided at 67 I was going to bat out of being senior pastor. Marilyn said, well, what are we going to do now? I said, we're not going to just sit around. We're going to do something. You know why? Because I believe, as Dr. Scovel, you just need to stay busy. Just make our life count the best we can. And so, you know, when I think about life itself, it's you know, you look at life and some people just can't wait till you get to retirement. Then what you do, you exchange burdens. When you're young, you have one set of burdens on how to get through, how to wait until you get to that age where you're ready to retire. But you get a whole new set of burdens when you get that age. Matter of fact, if you'll just take a moment and turn with me over there to the 12th chapter of the book of Ecclesiastes. This is kind of a humorous chapter. He saves it the last, but I jump ahead because we're talking about here as a life. Some people just, life is such a burden. If I could just didn't have to work. If I just had my children raised. If I had the house paid off. Well, I've got my house paid off and I've got my children raised. By the way, do not think for one moment that when they raise and they leave you, I got news for you. They're coming back and they bring a whole lot more with them than when they left. But I thought of, here is this man, Solomon, as he looks at the last of his life. He deals with some of the, now we have a whole new set of burdens. You see, life under the sun, in this body, in this life, has all kinds of burdens. You got some burdens tonight? Anybody here have any burdens? Raise your hands. We got some burdens? One of the burdens I carry with me is this body. I think about this chapter. Here, look at verse 1 of chapter 12. He's talking about looking at the end of your life. Retirement comes. Boy, I've just arrived. Now I don't have to work. I don't have to do this. I can do whatever I want to, only if you're able. Look at the verse. Remember now thy Creator in the days of thy youth, while the evil days come not. Wow, while the evil days come not. You know what he's going to talk about? He's going to talk about the body. The body. The years draw nigh when thou shalt say, I have no pleasure in them. While the sun or the light or the moon or the stars be not darkened, nor the clouds return after their rain. And then he gives a little dissertation about new burdens that you get. You get rid of one set of burdens in life. I've arrived, I've retired, and I just can't get over how many people can't wait till they retire, and then after they retire, they got a whole new set of burdens. Here it is. Think with me for a moment. He said, in the days when the keepers of the house shall tremble. That's the legs. Well, my legs are not as steady as they used to be, you know. Anybody here, Don, you that way? Your legs aren't, you know, you're just not. Mine aren't. The strong man shall bow themselves. You know, when I get out of a car anymore, it's a lot of trouble getting out of a car. And here's when I get out of a car. Here's what I'm doing. Trying to straighten up. Anybody here besides me? You're just trying to get that old body straightened up. My old man will say to me now and then, honey, just quit being bent over. Said, you know. But sometimes that's the only way you can see things. You're bent over. Takes a while to straighten your body up. And he says, and the grinders shall cease because they are few. Anybody know what that's talking about? That's your teeth. That's your teeth. You come in this world without any teeth and some of us are going out the same way we came in. And those that look out of the windows be darkened. That's your eyes. I just don't see as well as I used to see. I got some new burdens that I didn't have before. And the doors shall be shut in the streets when the sound of grinding is low. That's your hearing. Marilyn says, oh, I am just so tired of having to repeat. She'll tell me something. We're driving down, she'll say, and I'll say, would you say, honey, can you hear me now? Well, yes, when you get that loud. My hearing is just, and then I need, she says, why don't you get some hearing aids? Because then I would have to admit that I can't hear. She says, I'll tell you, you can't hear. How many know what I'm talking about? You're just there. And it says here in verse 5, and also, verse 4, and the door shall be shut in the street when the sound of grinding is low, and he shall rise up with the voice of a bird. Boy, you just can't. You remember the day when you thought if you could just retire, you could just sleep in. Just couldn't wait to sleep in. Who sleeps in when you get up there in age? You're awake a lot. I don't know what it is to go through a night just total sleep, and I won't deal with all the issues there. A little earthy about some of that, but you get the point. Go down to verse 5. Also, when they shall be afraid of that which is high. You know, when I see my grandchildren home and I see them and they want to climb up trees, kids love to climb trees, and I say, get off that tree. Get out of that tree. You're going to fall. I'm looking at it from my perspective. When I went home last time, some of you folks asked me, Sarah, did you stay off the ladders? I didn't fall off of one, but I did stay on them, and I got up to the roof, and I did what I had to do, and you know, because I won't give up. And Marilyn is out there trying to help me, and that's an interesting sight for two old people trying to get this, particularly the young, the wife trying to get the husband up on the roof and get him back down safely. Is a very interesting experience. Amen, honey? Honey, amen? Thank you, honey, for the amen. Verse 5, also when they shall be afraid of that which is high, and fear shall be in the way, and the almond tree shall flourish. That's when your hair turns white. You know, when I go back to Charles or Santa Maria, California, at times, somebody will walk up and say, what happened to your hair? I always say it's good to see you too. How you doing? You know, some of my hair turned loose, some of it turned gray and white. You come down here in verse 6, or ever the silver cord be loose, that refers to a stroke. I believe that's a stroke. Or the golden bowl be broken, that refers to the brain having some problems with it. Not your thinking process. You've heard me probably say this. You know, the second thing that goes... The second thing that goes is the mind. Right? I tell you what the first one was, but I can't remember. So there you go. And the pitcher be broken, that's the heart, and the fountain or the hole broken at the cistern, that's the circulatory system. We're just not the same as we used to be. You see, you get a whole new set of burdens the older you get. Well, let me just go back to think with me for a moment. We got this verse. So here's the writer of Ecclesiastes. We went all the way to the last chapter, the last few, some chapter 12. We dealt with some verses there, but the burdens, there's little change, but there's lots of change, C-H-A-I-N-S. We're chained sometimes to this body. Well, let me just, as we conclude this, let me give you how to ease your burdens of life? How do you ease them? How do you make them lighter than what they really are? How many have a burden tonight? Let me see your hand. You got a burden tonight? Sure. You got a burden. They're not fun, are they? How do you, let me just give you three or four things here about that tonight as I close, and then I'll pick it up again. Number one, rejoice in the work that you can perform. Rejoice in the work that you can do. You may not be able to do your things you used to do. My wife, when we first moved to Charleston, and after Hurricane Hugo, we decided we're going to re-landscape that whole place. Now, Trans, you've been there. You know what it's like. I mean, it's really nice. I mean, we laid about 9,000 brick patio, and we did all kinds of things. Now we got to keep it up at our rate. That was 20-something years ago. And Maryland's not the same as I sit on the porch and drink my iced tea and watch her. No, I'm just kidding. We do it together. But you know what? Whatever you can do, just be glad you can do it. Rejoice in the things you can do. I think that's what he's trying to say over there in chapter 2, verse 24. Look what he says. There is nothing better for a man that he should eat and drink and that he should make his soul enjoy good in his labor. This also I saw that it was from the hand of God. What a verse. Let me read it to you again. There is nothing better for a man that he should eat and drink and that he should make his soul enjoy good in his labor. May not be the labor you used to do. This also I saw that it was what? I like that. From the hand of God. Whatever you can do. You know, I think of a guy like Leif back there. He can build houses. And I can't do that. I know my limitations. And we have a wonderful set of tools at home, and Maryland does a great job with them. Never mind, I don't want to get into detail. Rejoice in the work that you can do. Secondly, recognize that the wonders of God are available to every believer. The wonders of God. Recognize that God, look over there in chapter 3, verse 11. That's a great thought here in verse 11. He hath made everything beautiful in his time. Also, he has set the world in their heart. The word world here is a word for eternity. God has set eternity in your heart. You can enjoy the wonders of God this side of heaven. You don't have to wait till you die. You get to heaven to enjoy the wonders of God. Look at that verse again. It's a very key verse. He had made everything beautiful in its time. You know, life can be beautiful. I hear people all the time, I'm just so sick of life. You know, God doesn't want you to have that attitude. He wants you not only to rejoice in the work that you can do, but recognize the wonders of God are available to you. You can enjoy the beauty of God's creation, the beauty of God's life. You can have that fellowship. Because where does eternity exist? Inside you. Inside me, eternity is there. The eternal divine God lives within every one of us. He had made everything beautiful in his time, also he has set the world in thy heart so that no man can find out the work that God had made from the beginning to the end. You know, there's just some things. I wonder, boy, I think about how God created this earth, and it doesn't amaze you. You know what amazes me more than anything about the wonders of God? I cannot figure out for one moment. I thought it over. I don't know why God ever saved me. That makes no sense to me. Makes none. Zero sense to me. I got a brother that's not saved. I got family members. I got people that live in our street that aren't saved. And God saved me. That's a wonder I can't figure out. And by the way, if you say, well, I'm sure God's glad that he saved me. I know he is, but I got news for you. It's amazing God saved you. It is That is the thing. I sometimes get alone and I just weep. I say, God, why? Why did you save me? Why did you give me an opportunity to hear the word? Why? It's an amazing thing to me. And I think at times we've lost the wonder of it all. That God has put that in our hearts. And sometimes we live as though we deserve it. We don't deserve to be saved. Not only do we need to rejoice in the work that you can perform, because it's from the hand of God, recognize the wonders of God are available, replace misguided wealth with the riches of God's wealth. Replace. You know, we've got too many of God's people that are trying to build a kingdom here on this earth. just replace misguided wealth with the riches of God's wealth. I think he deals with that in chapter 2, verses 6 to 11, but I see the clock is running out there. In verse 6, chapter 2 and verse 6, he talks about the great works that he did. He built some important things. He did. This guy studied science. He studied everything man could study. You know what he says? It's all vain. And he gathered all the wealth he could gather, and he's at the end of his life. He's the billionaire. He's the Bill Gates of that day. Now he's looking at the end of his life. And guess what he's going to have to do? You ready for this? He's going to leave it to his kids. And his kids are worthless for the things of God. Wow. In fact, he deals with this in the book. And so he says, basically there, after he'd studied all these things, look at verse 10, and whatsoever my eyes desired, I have kept not from them. Anything he looked at, he wanted, he took. Because he thought, if I have this, and he gained everything, he's the richest man probably that ever lived in this life. And what profit the man if he gained the whole world and lose his own soul? And where your treasure is, that's where your heart is. Where's your treasure tonight? Well, this is a great book. And he is going to teach us contentment. I won't be able to deal with that tonight. Are you content tonight? I hope you're content tonight. Yeah, but if I just had that house that I've always wanted, I'd be content. If I had that car, if I had, you know, anything I wanted to buy, he had it all, he wasn't content. I hope you're content tonight. We've got more to say next time.